Today, you and I are getting to learn from the incredible James Clear. He's widely regarded as one of the top experts in the world on habit formation and behavior change, whose book on habits has sold 25 million copies. I'm talking about none other than Atomic Habits.
I feel like if I sit there and I ruminate about something, it just gets worse. It gets bigger in my head. But if I take one small action on it, if I just get started on it, now I'm influencing the outcome. You know, now I'm shaping what's going to happen. Action relieves anxiety.
You said at the very beginning is that the secret to winning is knowing how to lose. How do you start the engine up again? And what's the mistake you see people make?
There's just a period where you just got to get through. Life might be bad now, but that doesn't mean it's always going to be that way. Life might be hard now, but it's not always going to be hard. And you're going to be okay. You're going to make it out the other side. I think we should all give ourselves permission for our habits to shift based on the season that we're facing.
Explain the four laws of behavior change.
The first law is to make it obvious. The second law is to make it attractive. The third law is to make it easy. The easier, more convenient, frictionless, simple a habit is, the more likely it is to be performed. And the fourth and final law is...
That's amazing. Hey, it's your buddy Mel. And before we jump into this unbelievable conversation with James Clear, you're about to learn that you're not the problem. The fact that you don't have systems is the problem. You're going to learn these systems. We're going to get right into it. You're going to love this. It's going to help you achieve your goals. But I have a goal too. My goal is...
Ahora continuamos con el podcast. Pero antes, ¿sabías que solo uno de cada cinco oyentes llega al final de un episodio? Por eso, resumimos tus podcasts favoritos. Entra en nuestra web para saber más.
That 50% of you who watch here on YouTube are subscribers. And right before we were about to start this episode, my team showed me this. 57% of you who watch the Mel Robbins podcast here on YouTube are not subscribers. You're the kind of person who likes supporting people who support you. My goal is that we get to 50%.
Hello, Mel. How are you?
I am fantastic. I am so excited to be able to have this conversation with you because your work has made such a big difference in my life. I have bought Atomic Habits and pressed it into people's hands more times than I can count. And to be able to unpack the simple but powerful insights today, I've just been looking forward to this since I started the podcast.
No, thank you so much. That's very nice of you to say.
Well, it's true. And here's where I want to start. What will I experience in my life that could be different, James, if I take everything that you're about to share with us and teach us today to heart and I apply it to my life?
Well, I'll give you three things right off the bat. So first is action relieves anxiety. Action relieves anxiety. So if you're feeling stressed about something, you fear something, there's a problem that's kind of bothering you, taking action on it reduces the fear that you feel about the problem because now you're influencing the outcome. Second thing is it builds resilience. So in a lot of ways, I feel like the secret to winning is knowing how to lose. And what I mean is it's knowing how to bounce back from a loss. And so many of the things that we'll talk about today are about getting started and about making it easier for yourself to get started, particularly after you fail, after you suffer something. And so the secret to winning is knowing how to lose. And these strategies will teach you how to be more resilient, bounce back from those losses. And then the third thing is better results. You know, in a way, procrastinating is choosing to delay a better future. It's choosing to ignore the results that you could be having, the potential that you could be fulfilling. And most of our outcomes in life are a lagging measure of the habits that precede them. So your bank account is a lagging measure of your financial habits. Your physical fitness is a lagging measure of your training habits. Your knowledge is a lagging measure of your reading habits. It's the thing that is the result of the action.
You're basically saying the bank account I see today is a result of the habits that I had like a year ago?
Almost all things that we have now are a result of the daily life, the daily system that we've been following for the last, say, 6 months or a year or 2 years.
Understanding that the journey to better habits involves acknowledging small daily actions is vital. As the discussion shifts, listeners will explore how just 5 focused minutes can rejuvenate momentum, inspire progress, and encourage re-engagement with forgotten goals. What simple steps could redefine your routine today?
You'd be surprised what you can do with 5 good minutes. You know, 5 good minutes of conversation can restore a relationship. 5 good minutes of exercise will leave you winded and like reset your energy and mood for the day. 5 good minutes of writing will make you feel like the manuscript is moving forward again. It doesn't take much to feel good. And so you just need a little bit to get yourself back on the path.
That's the entire premise of this podcast, that it takes so little to make you feel good again. And once you do, the progress and the momentum kicks in. If you're the kind of person who's listening and you're like, God, I've just failed too many times. And so you feel discouraged about starting in, whether it's putting yourself back out there on the dating scene, or it's dusting off your resume after getting laid off and feeling like, what value do I have to offer? Or you tried yet again to lose the weight or to stick to the meditation and you failed again. So what is the failure premortem?
Okay, so first, you want optimism. My little shorthand is, I don't want to be my own bottleneck. Okay, so I try to work backwards from magic at the start. What would the magical outcome be? What would the thing that I really want to achieve look like? What's the optimal outcome look like? Then the next phase, this is where the failure premortem comes in. So you switch from optimism to pessimism. All right, I know where I want to go. So now let's be my own critic for a minute. The failure premortem, it's just this simple question of, if we look back six months from now, and this has failed, where does it fail? So it's just you're pre-analyzing where the potential points of failure.
Oh, this is before you even get started.
You haven't done anything yet, but you're trying to be the one to figure out, what are the flaws in what I'm about to do?
Okay.
And so the failure premortem just says, if this fails, where does it fail? And you can come up with all kinds of things like that. Let me give you an example for habits. So like, let's say that you want to start going to the gym.
Yes.
And you're like, well, if this plan fails, where does it fail? And it might fail because you don't know which gym you're going to use. So you're like, all right, I'll pick one that's on the route of my commute each day. So then you say, okay, it might fail because I don't have my gym clothes ready. So you're like, all right, I need to set my clothes out the night before or have my gym bag ready early. I had one person who they were like, I am going to the gym and I wish I could stick to it more, but this gym doesn't have a water fountain. And so when I go there, I'm like, oh, I always forget to bring my water bottle. And that's enough to make me be like, I'm not going to go because they don't have a water fountain there. And little points of friction like that sound kind of silly when you say it, but you're like, yeah, that's a potential point of failure. And you need to have a plan for getting your water bottle full and make sure that you bring that each day.
Yes.
And so you start to check off these boxes of what are the things that could hold you back from this plan working. And then you switch back to optimism, because what you don't want is to go into this process feeling like you're doubting yourself to begin with.
Right, I'm screwed. Why am I even doing this?
That attitude's just going to make it harder.
Yes.
So you start with optimism, you switch to pessimism, try to poke the holes in your argument, and then we're back to optimism again. We want everybody on board and feel like we've got the right attitude going into it.
Okay. I love this, because one of the things that I immediately thought as you were using the gym example is, I immediately could pop into the pessimism mindset. And I think I'm a good problem solver, but I was like, okay, well, I don't know what to do at a gym. And so I walk around and then feel overwhelmed and intimidated because I'm not quite sure what the routine should be. And then I leave. The other one is, I would immediately see that I would have shot the goal too high and would have started with an hour every day for the next 6 months. And so now I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I got to reduce the time and stick to the schedule. And what could I get done on my worst day? So what could the goal be? So now I'm using your tools. Mm. And then I finally am now saying, well, I would about a weekend go, this isn't fun anymore. And so I can see how you can anticipate ways in which you would break your own ability to make it happen.
So two things here. The first is, some of this depends on how you're measuring things. It can really be helpful to pick a different form of measurement. So if you take like going to the gym, what's the common measurement? Everybody's like, what's the scale say? And how do you look in the mirror? That's what everybody's measuring. But let's forget about that. Measure it in a totally different way. So this reader, his name's Mitch, and I mentioned him in Atomic Habits. When he first started going to the gym, all right, so he lost over 100 pounds. He's kept off for more than a decade now. And when he first started going, he had this strange little rule for himself where he wasn't allowed to stay for longer than 5 minutes. So he'd get in the car, drive to the gym, get out, do half an exercise, get back in the car, drive home. And it sounds silly. You know, you're like, this is not going to get him the results that you want. But if you take a step back, what you realize is he was mastering the art of showing up. He was becoming the type of person that went to the gym 4 days a week, even if it was only for 5 minutes. And that's the different form of measurement there. He's not measuring the result. He's measuring, did I show up or not? And that gives him something else to win on in the early days. I think this is a pretty deep truth about habits, something that people like often overlook, which is, a habit must be established before it can be improved.
Oh,
it has to become.
Hold on a second. A habit must be established before it can be improved.
A habit must be established before it can be improved.
Before diving into the complexities of adopting healthier eating habits, it's crucial to grasp how identity aligns with actions. Understanding that small daily choices reinforce who you wish to become sets the stage for practical strategies. What does simplifying this process look like in real life scenarios?
I think it provides a good example of people will say something that they think is simple, but it's actually not that simple. Mm. They think they're making it easy and simple, but they need to scale it down even more.
Okay.
So like, let's say somebody says, all right, I'm just going to focus on one habit. I'm just going to try to eat healthy. Well, you know, what is involved in that, right? Like if you're currently eating a lot of meals out or ordering a lot of meals, well, first you need to decide what you're going to make. You need a grocery shopping habit. So you got to get the stuff. You need some meal prep habits. Maybe you even need new skills. Like, do you need knife skills or like learn how to do some stuff that maybe you didn't know how to do before? After you make the meal, you have a bunch of dishes that need to be cleaned. So now you need to develop like a cleaning habit of washing those. So there's actually like 6 or 7 things that are all separate habits. So I would say, you can try to scale this down
okay. And
start easy on yourself. And maybe, you know, for like, let's take doing the dishes, for example, maybe for the first week, you just eat off of paper plates. And no, it's not super sustainable. And it's not the thing that you want to do forever. But you're trying to take one element out of the equation so that you make it easier for yourself to do it. Another example that I thought was interesting, I talked to one woman who she took this idea of, we talked about earlier, of what would this look like if it was fun. So she wanted to start eating healthier and bring her lunch into work each day. But she realized making a salad didn't sound that fun to her. And so she came up with this phrase that she called a party in a bowl. And so she would make a salad, but she would do like all kinds of wild things at the start. Like she would chop up Snickers bars and throw them in, or she would like crumble potato chips on top or whatever. She just wanted it to feel like a party in a bowl. And she did that for the first like 2 weeks or month. And then after a month of bringing her lunch, she was like, okay, now I'm actually making it every morning. Then she was like, how can I make this healthier? How can I, you know, improve the quality of this?
I love, by the way, the potato chips on the salad.
That
sounds fantastic. Yeah. What a great idea. Little crunch.
Right.
Little salt.
Texture.
Yes.
Seems good. But, you know, how do you make it fun? How do you increase the odds that you master the art of showing up? That's the like first hurdle to clear.
Yeah. And what I also loved is that you're identifying for us the fact that we trip over ourselves because we make the results that we want either too big or too vague,
Yeah. That
we underestimate the complexity of the amount of change we're asking ourselves to make.
If you start with perfection as the bar, it becomes really hard to get started.
How do you think, or what have some of your readers said about the systems and habits related to cutting back on something like drinking or vaping or one of those things?
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about breaking bad habits. If you want to break a bad habit,
yes,
there are 3 different things you could do. So Okay. First thing is you could eliminate it entirely. So cut it out cold turkey. All right. Second way to break a bad habit is you could reduce it. So you don't necessarily stop it. You just reduce it to your desired degree. I would say a lot of people probably feel this way about their phone. It's not that I never want to use my phone. I just want to use it a little bit less or scroll a little bit less or whatever.
Yes.
And then the third category is you could replace it. So you can eliminate, you can reduce, or you can replace. Those are really your 3 options if you want to break a bad habit. And if you replace it, then you're substituting a new habit in its place. Hopefully one that's more healthy or more productive. Let me kind of answer these in reverse order. All right. So replace it. Habits, we talked a little bit early on about some ways to define a habit. Here's another way to define it. A habit is a solution to a recurring problem in your environment, right? So it's a solution to a recurring problem that you face. Let's say, for example, you come home from work and it's 5:30 and you're feeling exhausted and tired from a long day, right? That is a recurring problem that is going to happen throughout the weeks and months that your brain has to figure out how to solve. And for one person, maybe they solve it by scrolling on Instagram for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. For another person, the way that they solve it is maybe they smoke a cigarette. Or a third person, maybe the way they solve it is they go for a run. And you can see that some of these solutions are healthier than others,
Yeah. But
they're all solving the same root problem, which is I feel stressed and exhausted and tired after a long day, and I want to find a way to reset and kind of change my energy. And early in your life, I think particularly in your 20s, you may have this realization where the solutions that you have to the problems that you face are kind of things that you inherited or you picked up from your parents. What are the odds that the first way that you learn to solve this problem is the best way? Mathematically speaking, it's very unlikely that the way that your current solutions to the problems that you face are the best solutions.
So let me just give you an example. So if you grew up in a household where you saw mom or dad come home from a long day at work and they poured themselves a glass of wine as a way to unwind, turn off their brain, step right into the evening. If you inherited that habit as the way you solve the problem of, I've had a long day at work, I'm totally stressed, I want a quick way to de-stress, and the habit is pour a glass of wine or pour a drink. That's an example of the type of thing you're talking about.
Yeah. And I think the first step is not to judge yourself for it or to feel guilty about it. You don't need to feel bad about it. It's just, it's almost like sometimes I try to look at my habits almost like I'm going to the zoo. You know how you like go and look at an animal, you're like, oh, how interesting that they would do that. You know, like, oh, isn't that silly that they behave in that way? Like you kind of look at yourself with that lens. You're like, oh, okay, interesting that I'm doing this. And you just want to see things clearly. And then once you see how you're actually behaving, well, then there are adjustments that you can make. Yeah. And I think at that point you realize, all right, it's not my fault necessarily that I'm doing these things or that I learned this way to do it. But now it is my responsibility to make the change. The next level is you say, all right, I'm going to try to reduce the amount of time that I do this. One way that I try to practice this, so I have a home office and I have this little rule where I try to keep my phone in another room until lunch each day. Usually it ends up being like 9 to 11, 9 to noon, something like that. And I can't do it all the time, but I can do it maybe 70% of the time. And whenever I do it, I think it's interesting because it's like the phone is just down the hallway. It's only 30 seconds away, but I never go get it. And so I'm like, did I want it or not? You know, on the one hand, I wanted it so bad that when it was next to me, I would check it every 3 minutes. And on the other hand, I never wanted it badly enough that I would be willing to work 30 seconds and go down the hall and get it. And a lot of your habits are like that. They will curtail themselves to the desired degree if you just introduce a little bit of distance or a little bit of friction. The more that you increase friction between you and the behavior, the more likely it is to reduce itself. So there are a lot of environmental changes that could potentially work there.
Talk to us about the environment and the role that environment plays in terms of sticking to habits.
There's a chapter in Atomic Habits that's called The Secret to Self-Control. And there's a story that many of us tell ourselves, which is, oh, you know, if I was just more disciplined, if I just had more self-control, then I would be able to do these things. But the big takeaway from the research in that chapter, the surprising insight, is that when you look at people who exhibit high levels of self-control, the common pattern across them is not that they have higher discipline than the average person. The common pattern is that they are in situations where they're tempted less frequently.
Tempted less frequently.
Fewer temptations is the single biggest driver of exhibiting high self-control. And so the lesson is you don't need to try to be more disciplined. You don't need to wish that you were a person with more willpower. You need to take a little bit of time to design an environment where you're not tempted as frequently.
To cultivate effective habits, one must confront how their environment influences their choices, particularly the impact of social circles on behavior. As our next discussion unfolds, listeners will learn about the transformative 2-minute rule, a powerful strategy to jumpstart any habit effortlessly. Curious how it works?
It's a really easy way to force yourself to get started. I hope that you find all the ideas interesting and useful that we talk about today. But if you can only remember one thing, the 2-minute rule is a good thing to remember. And I say that because it can be applied to pretty much any habit. So you take whatever habit you're trying to build and you scale it down to something that takes 2 minutes or less to do. So
meditation.
Yeah. Meditate for 20 minutes becomes meditate for 1 minute. Read 30 books a year becomes read one page. Do yoga 4 days a week becomes take out my yoga mat. And sometimes when I tell people this, they resist it a little bit. They're like, okay, buddy, you know, I know the real goal isn't just to take my yoga mat out. I know I'm actually trying to do the workout, you know? So you're like, okay, if I know it's a trick and why would I fall for it, basically? But there's this great quote from Ed Lattimore where he says, the heaviest weight at the gym is the front door. And man, there are a lot of things in life that are like that. You know, the hardest action is the first movement. The most difficult step is the first one. And when you're in the work, once you've already started, it's often easier to keep going. It's starting the work that is the hard part. All the friction's at the beginning. There's this concept in physics, coefficient of friction. The friction is highest when you're not moving. It's once you're moving that things start to go a little bit easier. Momentum works in both ways. You know, like if you sit on the couch and you ruminate on, you know, how things aren't going well in your life, you feel kind of lethargic, like that's easy to be low energy and for things to not go well right then. But you start moving a little bit, even if it's just stretch on the floor for 5 minutes, now you start to move forward and things go, you know, go a little bit faster.
You know, speaking of friction, there's a concept that is floating around called habit stacking. What is that?
Habit stacking, I think habit stacking is a great approach for building habits. It's a concept that comes from BJ Fogg. He's a professor at Stanford. And he had a great insight, which is Habits tend to be easier to build or stick to if they're tied to a behavior that you're already doing. So we all have habits that we already do. Okay. Like maybe you already make a cup of coffee every morning.
Yep.
And your new habit that you want to build is you want to start meditating. So you can stack that new habit on top of the old one. So your habit stack could be something like, after I make my morning cup of coffee, I will meditate for 60 seconds. And then, you know, you can start to chain this together. You could like create multiple. So you could say, after I make my cup of coffee, I will meditate for 60 seconds. After I meditate for 60 seconds, I will write my to-do list for the day. After I write my to-do list for the day, I will prioritize them and start working on the first one or whatever. And now you've got a little stack, a little package of behaviors that happens the same way every time, and you do it each morning. And from talking with a lot of readers, people like to use these at certain moments throughout their day. That people like habit stacks in the morning. I have a lot of readers who they'll come up with one for what they do when they get into the office. They'll be like, I go into the office, I hang up my jacket, I set my purse on the desk, I take my water bottle and I fill it up, and then I sit down and I answer the first email. And I always do it in the same order, and that like helps me get into the day, and I just know exactly what I'm going to do when I get there. Sometimes you'll see people have one, like a power down routine at the end of the day to kind of help them, you know, wrap the day up and get ready for bed and whatever. So you can use it anywhere. I have some readers who have come up with very creative ones. I had one guy who was, he was such a bro and really liked going to the gym, and he was not managing his finances well. And so his new habit stack was, whenever I drink a protein shake, I will check my finances. And it just, it happened frequently enough that it would force him to check in on his budget and stay more on top of it. So you can do strange ones like that. You have to be willing to experiment. You know, Atomic Habits, I've tried to lay everything out that I can. Like I wanted it, I don't know whether I reached it or not, but my objective when I was writing was I want to write the single best book that's ever been written about habits. But even so, even if in some magical world I achieve that outcome, you as an individual still have to be willing to experiment. Because what matters is, does it work for your life? You know, and so you got to, maybe you need to rearrange the habit stack. Maybe you need to change when you're inserting things. You know, for one person, putting the meditating right after a cup of coffee makes a lot of sense. If you have three toddlers and you're trying to get pants on your four-year-old, that's not a good time to meditate, you know? So you need to find the right time of day to insert your habits and behaviors. And that requires a little bit of experimentation.
So for somebody who has a goal that's really big, whether it's, I want to write a novel, I want to start a business, I want to take on a big project, and they're clear about that, what would you recommend is the one habit to build first, since that's such a big goal out there?
Interestingly, I'd say there's probably two things to focus on first. The first is you probably need a habit of reflection and review.
What does that mean?
Well, what are the odds that if you keep your head down and you work really hard, that you're going to be working on the highest and best thing? It's just so unlikely that out of all the things that you could be doing, that you're working on the best thing right now. And so it's this interesting tension, because on the one hand, having a great work ethic and working hard is really valuable in life. And it does pay off in some sense. Like you can't get results without working on things. But it can also become a crutch. Where if you, like for myself, a lot of the time, I know for many years, like if I had a problem, my solution was I'll just work my way out of it. And that works for a little while, but at some point it breaks. Like you break yourself down. And then also you can only work so much. Like you, maybe if you really grinded, you could work 10% harder than you are right now. But you can't work 100% harder or like 100x harder.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
Yeah.
But you could work on something else that gets you 100x the result if you're working on the right thing. And so for any project, you know, this hypothetical question that you asked is, what if I have this big goal? I have a business I want to launch. I have, you know, an initiative I want to start. I have, you know, whatever. There's going to be many ways to do it. And you need to have at least some time to sit and think each week and come back to saying, are we doing this the right way? Mm-hmm. You know, I think if you have two things in life, if you have a bias toward action and you really move fast, and you continually revisit this question of what are we really trying to do here? And is this the best way to do it? If you can do those two things and you just keep doing them on repeat, you can really get a lot done in life. But you need both. And so that's the second thing that I was going to mention is this bias toward action. It's getting started. It's finding some small way to move now. My little saying that I try to remind myself of is don't rush, but don't wait. Mm-hmm. You know, I find that if I am in the mix, if I'm taking action, if I'm working on things, then that's great. I need to be patient. I need to let the results accumulate. But if I'm not actually taking action, I'm not being patient. I'm just waiting. And nothing's going to happen in that case. So both thinking big picture, what are we really trying to do here? And is this the best way to accomplish it? And then having a bias toward action and moving fast. Those two things work really well together.
Amazing advice. You know, one of the things you said at the very beginning is that the secret to winning is knowing how to lose. What do you do and how do you pick yourself back up if you've had a little bit of a good streak and then you don't go to the gym or you don't write or you start to drink again? How do you start the engine up again? And what's the mistake you see people make?
Oh, I try to keep this little mantra in mind, which is never miss twice. And so, you know, maybe I show up and I, you know, do the right thing. I've been writing for 6 days in a row. And then the seventh day I miss. Well, you know, I wish I hadn't missed, but that's okay. Let me pour all my energy into getting back on track the next day. And what you realize is that at the end of the year, those mistakes are just like a little blip on the radar. But that's only true if you never miss twice. It's only true if you get back on track quickly. And I think you see this in many domains, which is the top performers have this interesting quality. They're all human. They all make mistakes like everybody else. But the thing that they share is they tend to get back on track quickly. And if the reclaiming of a habit is fast, the breaking of it doesn't matter that much. But it's all about getting back on track that matters. So it's, again, it's this concept of bouncing back from a loss that that is really critical.
James Clear, what are your parting words?
No matter what the habit is that you're trying to build, it's easy to talk yourself out of it because you know that the results aren't going to be good right away. But like your favorite athlete's first workout was just as bad as yours. You know, your favorite chef's first meal was just as bad as yours. Your favorite writer's first sentence was just as bad as yours. You need to keep going. You need to do the early low stakes stuff to prepare for the high stakes stuff, to build the capacity and the ability to do the other things. And so don't overlook the small moments that you have each day. You know, every day has an opportunity built into it. You know, whatever age you are right now, your future self would love to be it. When you're 70, you would give anything to go back and be 60 again and have the opportunity of those next 10 years. And you should use that as best as you can. And whether that's a small moment, like a little dance recital or some stupid little speech that you're going to give to your friends or whatever it is, try to do it well. You know, whatever thing that you have in front of you, try to do it well. If you do it well, if you take advantage of the moment that you have, you earn the right to do more things.
That's all for today. Visit podsummarizer.xyz and start creating summaries of your own podcast in just seconds. Don't miss it.